on today's Run to the Top podcast.
The first thing really is to just choose a race and sign up for it in your calendar. I always say that it pays to start with the end in mind and get a goal, put it, schedule it in your, and then what gets scheduled gets done basically.
Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast from Runners Connect, where it's all about learning from the best and most inspiring minds in the sport. Together, we can train a smarter, healthier, and faster running community. Now here's your host, Stephanie K. Atwood.
Welcome. This is Stephanie K. Atwood, Boston Marathon qualifier, coach, and host for the Run to the Top podcast. Today's interview is about transitioning from running events to triathlons with coach, podcaster, and competitor Michael Erickson. Upping the ante with swimming, cycling, and running can be an incredible high, but I have learned that many of us are fearful about swimming or cycling. Additionally, we just don't understand the logistics of making it all happen. It can be quite daunting when you think about the whole process and wonder how to get it all together in training and on race day. Michael will break it down into small segments and help us understand the steps that will get us from novice to experienced, from beginning training to crossing the finish line. Welcome to Run to the Top podcast, Michael Erickson, fellow podcaster, triathlete coach, and currently living in Portugal. How are you doing?
Thank you, Stephanie. I'm doing great.
Good to have you here, and thank you for joining us today. Have you completed any triathlons recently, and if so, where and how did you do?
Yeah, I just recently actually did the Ironman 70.3, which is the half Ironman distance race in Cascais, which is right next to Lisbon, a very nice little old fishing village that is becoming sort of like the Portuguese Riviera, almost like a jet set location for that a lot of tourists come to, but really beautiful. And I ended up doing really well. I've been focusing on short distance before, so this was actually my first half Ironman distance race, and I won the 25 to 29 age group and qualified for the World Championships. So I was very pleased with that.
Wow, congratulations. And that actually leads me to one other question I have for you before we get into our four basic questions. Did you or any of your coached athletes go to the Ironman 2018 World Championships in Kona?
Well, it depends on how you look at it. Yes, one coached athlete, but I didn't coach her to getting there. I'm actually just now starting to coach her. We have been in touch over the last couple of weeks, but she's... So I do coach somebody who went to Kona, and I also had an athlete in the 70.3 World Championships in South Africa 1 or 2 months before Kona. So I have a couple of athletes of a very high level.
Yeah, really cool. So maybe we can talk about that a bit more a little bit later. But we always start off our podcast with the four basics. So let's get started on that. How old are you now? Where were you born? Where do you live now? And what is your favorite type of run and or favorite distance?
I'm 28 years old. I was actually born in Sweden, but that was more of a coincidence than anything. My parents happened to be working for just half a year or so in Sweden, even though they are Finnish, although Swedish-speaking Finns. So I am Finnish. I grew up in Finland, but in a Swedish-speaking part of Finland. So Swedish is my first language, English is my second, and Finnish is only my third language. Mm. And right now I live in Lisbon, Portugal. I moved here 1 year ago in October 2017. I actually just 1 week ago had my 1 year anniversary of moving here. That was also when I quit my engineering job and started coaching full time. And the last question was my favorite type of run. Yeah, so after this race that I did recently, I have to say that the half marathon as part of a half Ironman, that is really a distance that I do well at. So I like that. But also if we talk about pure running, then I think that I come from a running background and I did like the marathons, although probably because it's such a long time since I did my last marathon, I've forgotten how painful they are. But if I had to choose a run distance, it would be a marathon.
Okay, good answer. So running was how you first got into endurance type of sports and competition, it sounds like. Why do you think so many of us begin our careers as runners?
I think it's because because of the simplicity and really the purity of the sport. But you just need a pair of shoes and you're good to go. So that's really it. It's cheap. There are no no barriers to entry. It's something that's easy enough to do. Anybody can put one foot in front of the other, and it doesn't have to be fast. It doesn't have to be pretty, but it's something that anybody can get started on. And it's a really great way to get fit.
I agree with you completely. The convenience, the simplicity of it. I know for a lot of people in my generation, we started running to lose weight. And so we were even kind of embarrassed to be seen. And I would run at night, you know, so I didn't get seen. And of course, if you're in a swimming pool or if you're on a bike, more people are going to see you. So running does have that simplicity and that convenience.
Yes, absolutely.
So what was your reason, you personally, to move into triathlon training?
For me, it was really injuries because I always had in the back of my mind that one day I wanted to move into triathlon and try that. But I wouldn't have done that if it hadn't been for having some serious knee problems that kept me out for quite a long time from running. And I think it was when I had my latest bout of that knee injury, that was back in the spring of 2015. It's actually not my most recent, but when I was still a runner, in March of 2015, I think, I got some really bad problems with my knee and I didn't get back to running and I went to physiotherapists. I did rehab, just wouldn't get better. So I started swimming and cycling just to stay fit, to do some cross training. And then really that summer, I realized that, well, hey, I haven't been run training, but maybe I should just do a sprint triathlon or a couple of sprint triathlons. I can run 5K on this injured knee without training and I'll just train the swim and the bike legs. So I did that. So I actually got in that way. And then when I slowly, probably almost 9 months after first getting that knee injury, it started to heal and I started to be able to run train again. I really never looked back. I was hooked on triathlon and the really how varied it was and the different training for the different disciplines, the added challenge and the strategic planning that you needed to do. I really liked it. So I never looked back really.
There are a lot of aspects to triathlon training, and I do think that can be daunting for a lot of people who have been running and the simplicity of running, moving into a triathlon. So what do you see as some of the difficulties for novices moving from running into a multi-sport event like a triathlon?
Knowing how to, well, first of all, it really depends on when you start, but technique can be one thing, and especially swim technique in this case, but also things like if you've never been cycling on a road bike, being locked into your pedals is a small technical thing that really doesn't take a lot of practice to get used to. But when you get started, it's sort of like a threshold still that you need to overcome. So those things about the technical aspects of the sports different disciplines, they are some things that may be daunting depending on the terrain that you have around you. Even cycling uphill and downhill can cause some challenges. Another thing is learning how to train or training effectively, combining training in three different disciplines. It is a puzzle to fit all of those pieces together compared to running, which is really, it's not simple, but, or easy, but it's simple in comparison to figure out how you're supposed to be training. So that's another thing. And then finally, the logistics of it all with equipment and also on race day, there are a lot of logistics that go into it. Turning up for a triathlon race is a completely different experience than turning up for a running race, which really isn't difficult. You just turn up for it, you do your warm up. But with a triathlon race, you really need to basically be a living timetable and have a lot of things memorized, know a lot more rules, things like that. So there's a lot more that goes into that race day experience as well.
Now, the nice thing about triathlons is you can start off with something that's of really short distances. The first triathlon that I trained for was, I think it was 400 meters of swimming. That's, you know, it's pretty short. And I know you can even do triathlons in pools where you do the swimming part in the pool. Have you found that more people are afraid or have trouble with the swimming or with the cycling?
Definitely the swimming, I would say. And so, yes, those short super sprint races and even the ones with pool options, they are great starting points that I would highly recommend for anybody who doesn't have a background in swimming and find that the most challenging leg of the triathlon.
And now, also being stuck on a pedal, and you mentioned that, but how do you work with people on that so that they are able to pedal both up and downhill and get the most power out of that part of the triathlon, but get over that fear of being stuck, not being able to get out of their bike?
I recommend going to something like an empty parking lot and just practicing there. It could even be a grass field. It's actually a bit more difficult there because you don't have a firm surface to bike on. But then on the other hand, if the beginner that is trying to learn being clipped into the pedals is really afraid of falling, then that grass can be sort of a reassuring, softer surface that that isn't as intimidating as the asphalt of that empty parking lot. But it is a lot about just taking that leap of faith, and pretty much anybody, I would say anybody, will find that once they are clipped in, it's not any more difficult than to pedal the bike and steer the bike than a normal bike with flat pedals. It's just that first step of having the courage and taking the leap of faith to lock yourself into those pedals. And then if you have somebody next to you that can walk next to you or run next to you, if when you are trying to clip out of the pedals, that person, if there are any issues and you start to lose speed, but you're still stuck in your pedals and don't get your shoes out, that person can just hold you so that you don't fall off your bicycle or fall with your bicycle because you're stuck and can't get out. So having that second person who is on their feet and walks next to you, that's a good thing to do as well.
That's a good suggestion. I did talk with one woman who, she had only one foot clipped in initially and the other pedal was not, didn't have a clip on it, even though she had the same pair of shoes for both. Is that an option as well?
Yeah, that's absolutely a good option. Yes.
And then also the level of tension of your foot in the pedal clip can be adjusted a little bit.
It can. It's something that's not easily done when you're starting out, though. But if you're trying out a new bike in a bike shop, they might be able to help you with that. But it really depends. So it's not something that's necessarily as easy to control as the place that you're training at and having a person with you. But yes, if you're at a bike shop, they might be able to help you with that.
I like that idea of having somebody run next to you. I've seen people fall over with their bikes because they didn't realize they were in their pedal. So I know that these are issues that are, they're fears for people until they work through them. And so having another person there does seem like a good idea.
Yeah, but we've all done it and people still do it even when they're 10, 15, 20 years into their triathlon career. You just lose a bit of focus and try to show off maybe when you're doing some workouts and try to do a track stand or something, and then you end up losing your balance and you don't get your shoes out as quickly as you need, and then you fall off and it seems really stupid. It's like being in a ski lift and falling in a ski lift. I don't know if that's normal, but that's something that I've done at least on a couple of occasions.
Yeah.
It's the same sort of
thing. Yeah. So what part of the triathlon training or the transition from running to the three different events was a struggle for you, or which was the most difficult?
Definitely the swimming was the one that I had the least proficiency in. So, but I wouldn't say I didn't have any sort of intimidation with swimming. I had been swimming as a kid, not competitively or anything like that, but just learned how to swim.
Right.
Similar to what I know, I think the YMCA in the States, they sort of have the learn how to basically move in the water sort of teachings. So I had done that, but definitely it wasn't pretty. I wasn't swimming fast. So that was the biggest challenge for me.
And how are you as a swimmer now?
I'm pretty good. It really depends on, it's still, I would say, my weakest discipline, but for example, in that recent race where I won, like I was very well rounded. I had the seventh fastest swim and fifth fastest bike and fifth fastest run. So, but the fastest overall time, because everybody else had like one bigger weakness, and I was just strong across the board. So,
interesting.
But in some races, I'll still struggle in the swim compared to, for example, if I compare to the very elite, the swim is where I'm the farthest behind, definitely.
I was watching the Ironman 2018 in Kona, and oh my gosh, those lead swimmers, they have got it down, don't they?
Yes, they do. Yeah, it's there's something to be said for having started and actually done competitive swimming as a kid. There just seems to be something that is very difficult to get unless you put in 30,000 meters or 30,000 yards per week or more consistently or many, many years time. Actually, it might be even more than that that's needed to get to that level. So it's a lot of miles and a lot of strokes that you need to take unless you have that background. But you can still get to a very good level without any sort of background. And there are many people that are living proof of that.
Swimming is my challenge too in the triathlon. But one of the things that I've always appreciated about starting as a runner and a reasonably good runner is that I can pass so many people because the running event is the final event. And I like that part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that many runners do like and mm-hmm. about triathlon. And it's actually a really good thing to have that run as the last leg of the triathlon when you come from a running background, because you seem to always be ending your races on a high. Even if you have a comparatively bad race by your standards, you can still, like, a bad run for you might still be very good compared to most of the field. So you end up passing a lot of people. So you can still get that positive feel-good feeling after the race.
Yeah, so that's definitely an advantage for people who have started as runners and then are moving into triathlons. They can know that running experience is going to help them at a time when strategically it can be very beneficial, psychologically, strategically.
Yeah, absolutely. And also I think that the runners, they do have like a lot of a big advantage in that the running is the one discipline that really the training is the hardest for that one, and they already have that done. So adding the biking and the swimming is comparatively less taxing on the body compared to running. So, but whereas if you come from a swimming background with very little load, because you're basically you're in the water all the time, so you don't have that pounding, it can be very difficult to go into run training, and a lot of people would struggle with injuries because of that. So that's another advantage of coming from a running background.
Yeah, I have a cousin who is he swam in college. He swam in high school, did very well competitively, and he almost always comes out of the water first in the triathlons or very close to first. And yet he says it's really discouraging because he starts getting passed, on the bike and in the running part.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's much better to be passing people than be passed. Absolutely.
I agree. Now, in 2017, you quit your engineering job in Helsinki, Finland, and moved to Lisbon, Portugal, which is just about a year, you said, to pursue coaching and your high-level training. So you've said that your engineering background is an important part of tools that you use for your coaching. Can you explain that?
Yeah, so I do coach some runners still, but I focus on triathlon especially. And since triathlon is, as I alluded to already, a very complex sport to train for, and there's no one right or wrong answer about how to train for it. But really the way I approach it as a coach is being very analytical, looking at my athletes' training. I look at their Garmin files or their uploaded to Training Peaks and try to find patterns in their training, what seems to be working for them, and do more of what's working basically, and try to eliminate things that they don't benefit from. Because training is, there are some good guidelines that we need to be aware of as coaches. There is good science in some areas, but in some other areas, it's all the Wild West, and we just need to make educated guesses about what might be the best approach for any given athlete. So I think for me that analytical approach on a one-to-one basis, looking at what seems to work for this athlete and then applying that in the future training and iterating to all the time try to make the training a little more effective, that's something that has helped me a lot. But also just in learning to gain the knowledge about the scientific information that is out there, because there are some things that we do know that at least on a population level seems to hold true training-wise. But then again, you need to be able to interpret that. And mm-hmm. My engineering background, and especially my work in the medical devices field, taught me really how to read and understand and interpret research. So I read a lot of research, and that's also sort of the niche that I've taken with my podcast a lot, that it's quite science-oriented at times. Not always. It's also a practical application of science, but I do sometimes get into quite deep into the scientific aspects of training for endurance sports in general, whether it's swimming, cycling, running, or triathlon, nutrition, whatever it may be. But those are just a couple of the most important examples I want to say about how I apply that. First, by being analytical, looking at data and iterating and applying what I see, what the patterns that I found, and then also getting to know and understand and interpret the science that exists out there and use that as starting points for my athletes to try to have a solid starting point and then iterate from there on that individual level.
Yeah, and I listened to one of your podcasts. It was about swimming. And I also kind of reviewed some of the information that was there on your website and just looked, you know, I was looking to learn more about you. But the impression that I get from talking with you as well as listening to your podcast is that you take in a lot of this research, you think about it. And then when you're presenting it to either your clients or your listeners, in this case, it's kind of put at a level that they can apply it, not at the maybe a very high level scientific one where you can learn, you personally can learn from it. But if you try to impress that on us normal people out here, it's going to be too much. But you've taken the time to actually figure all of that out.
Yeah, exactly. And it really depends on the person. Mm-hmm. Like if you talk about my coached athletes, some of them are really interested and want to know all about it and they understand it. Quite a few of the people I coach are actually engineers themselves. So in that case, we can have deep discussions about it. And in other cases, I just apply what I learn and the end result is a specific workout, for example, or some suggestion that I make about their recovery. But they don't know and they don't care why I give that information. And that's not really what they want from me. They just want me to tell them what to do. So it really depends on the individual.
Makes sense.
Then for the podcast, yeah, I have both of those levels because I have many different levels of listeners. So I do go into the background in certain episodes at least, but then I also try to basically distill that information into the practical application. And what does this actually mean for you and what you should do or should not do in your training and racing?
And that actually brings me to another question. Besides the engineering scientific aspects of your coaching, what other tools do you use?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, for really the most important thing is still, it's not the science, it's a communication between coach and athlete. There's actually also good science about that the session RPE, so the rate of perceived exertion that an athlete feels is almost as valid a measure of training load as any fancy power meter data or heart rate data that you can collect.
So fascinating.
Yeah, and that was from elite cycling teams that they did a big study on that. So really, with the athletes that I coach, it's very important for me that the athletes always comment on how they felt in the workout, how they felt that they performed compared to what they expected. Did they feel strong? Did they feel weak? Mm-hmm. How hard did they feel that the workout was? Anything else? And then talking face-to-face or Skype, usually with the athletes, that's how I get to know them. Because I think that a coach-athlete relationship is the gift that keeps on giving. Like the longer you are in that relationship, the more you get to know each other and the better it becomes. And I'm also, as an athlete, I have a coach myself and we're in the exact same situation because it's still a fairly new thing since I moved to Lisbon a year ago and I started working with my coach here locally at that time and really only officially around New Year. So it's still a fairly new thing and we're actually we're in that phase now that we're really getting to know what works. Both I get to know about his coaching and he gets to know about me as an athlete, and we're constantly still improving how that affects our coach-athlete relationship.
Sounds like it must be working if you came in first in your age division last week.
Yeah, absolutely. But that was a result of some pretty significant changes we made compared to the summer, which is just one example of how important it is with that communication, because I communicated too late that I was probably doing too much training with all of the other work that I did that I just didn't have time to do. And I was just too stressed in the summer and ended up being almost overtrained and to some extent, probably at least non-functionally overreached in that sense. Mm. And then we reduced the training, also change the type of training. And after having those discussions about what seemed to be working and what seemed to not be working, and then it was like magic. In just a month and a half or 2 months, I just made massive improvements in my fitness and suddenly was in the shape of my life.
Wow. Congratulations. That's terrific. Now, we are probably presenting an audience to you here that is novice to, I'm sure many of our listeners have tried a triathlon before. Can you go through some basic steps of how you take a runner and prepare him or her to take on the swimming, cycling, and running in a triathlon?
Yeah, sure. So the first thing really is to just choose a race and sign up for it and put it in your calendar. I always say that it pays to start with the goal, with the end in mind, and get a goal, put it, schedule it in your, and then what gets scheduled gets done, basically. You will have that in front of you, see it every day on your wall, perhaps on your fridge or something like that, and that will help you stay motivated to prepare for that. And then we already touched upon this, but really, I would recommend starting with a short triathlon, a sprint triathlon or a super sprint triathlon. Maybe an Olympic if you don't have any sprints in your region. An Olympic might be okay, but the shorter the better, really. And it's the same as in running. A marathon isn't any better than a 5K. Meb or Mo or Eliud Kipchoge aren't any better than Usain Bolt. It's just different distances, and you're just as much of a triathlete if you do sprint distance races as Ironman.
I like that. Now, an Olympic is what distance? A super sprint is what distance, or what events, and what are the common distances for those events and the sprint?
So the sprint, which is the shortest standard distance, the super sprint exists as well, but it's maybe not as common. So the sprint would be 750 meters of swimming, 20 kilometers of cycling, and 5 kilometers of running. And super sprints, they really vary, but usually something like 400 meters of swimming, 10 kilometers cycling, and 2.5 kilometers running. And then we have the Olympic would be double the distance of the sprint. So 1,500 meters of swimming and 40 kilometers of cycling and 10 kilometers of running.
So all of those are pretty doable. And of course, with the run at the end, I'm sure most runners have a good sense of what 10 kilometers, 5 kilometers, that feels like. So good distance, all of those, but I go along with you on the shorter distances, maybe just because your first event, then you're going to finish it and you're going to know more about what you want to do next. Wasn't long enough, too long, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And there's so much that goes into the race day logistics as well that is completely new. So really quite a few short sprint distance races can teach you so much more than one or two Olympic distance races, because you get that race experience.
And you can do them more frequently.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So the next thing that I would suggest really is to join a community of triathletes and or get a coach. And well, to join a community, if you have that available to you, like a triathlon club in your local area, I would do that regardless of if you get a coach or not. And if you have the ability, if you have the funds available to get a coach, then that's also definitely recommended. But not everybody has that. So in that case, even just joining that community will get you quite far, because you can learn from others and you can ask them for advice. If there's a coach, club coach, and that can help you, but even just the other people in the club will be happy to help you with anything, any questions that you have.
Yeah, it's great to have company.
Yeah. So these are things like the logistics of the race and the gear and equipment that you need. There's so much really that we can't go into all of this, but you'll find out along the way that this is something that I don't know, and this is something that I don't know, and what about that? And anytime something comes up, then if you have that community around you, then that will be a massive help.
I know in my first triathlon ever, I didn't have a decent bike, and I wasn't really prepared to spend a lot of money on getting an upgraded bike. But someone in the group that I was training with had a bike that they were willing to sell to me for, you know, not too much money. And so that was like the perfect thing, because I knew I was getting something that had been used in a triathlon, but I also knew that I probably would want to upgrade if I really liked triathlons. But at this time, it was something I could afford and could perform decently with.
Yeah, I also started there. I started with a used road bike that I mm-hmm. bought from somebody in the local club for 400 euros, which would be, I guess, $500 or so. Uh-huh. And even my second, that was my first road bike. And then my first triathlon bike was also secondhand that I found through the local community in Helsinki. So I was on secondhand bikes for quite a long time before I got my first new bike.
Yeah, and also just having someone that you like or someone that you know sell it to you, then you have a little more confidence that it's going to work for you.
Yeah. And ideally, somebody who is quite knowledgeable about bikes can really tell if it's a good fit for you, because what you don't want is to get a bike that's way too small or way too big for you. So,
makes sense.
So maybe if you can bring it to a bike shop and ask the people in the bike shop if that's the right size for you, then that would be a big help as well.
Now, any other points you want to add on this getting started?
Yeah, so then the big thing really then when it comes to the training aspect and preparing is to identify what your limiters for the race are. And if it's swimming, learning swim technique, then really most of your time you should be spending on trying to learn that swim technique and probably getting swim technique lessons. But maybe it might be something else, like we mentioned, cycling with your shoes clipped in. If that's something that is a problem for you, then really mm-hmm. make that a priority. So, mm-hmm. so really try to think about what your biggest limiters are and try to get to work on them. And don't forget about things like the transitions. So mm-hmm. Getting out of your wetsuit quickly, getting off your bike efficiently and getting started running. So those sorts of workouts or training sessions are also things that you should work into your training. And if you find that that's something that is taking you a long time, then that's something that you should prioritize, because that's quite a lot of free speed or free minutes that you can save in your race when you just do a little extra work to eliminate those limiters.
Let's talk about transitions, because this is something that as a runner, we may know nothing about. You know, we don't know the rules. We don't know the expectations. We don't know the setup. Can you talk about that some more?
Yeah. So when you transition, well, in the race, you will start usually either on the beach or in the water. So you'll already be set with your wetsuit on if it's a wetsuit legal swim, which most races for age group athletes are wetsuit legal, which also helps for the weaker swimmers, because in a wetsuit you will have some extra flotation, so it's actually a lot easier to swim in that. Mm-hmm. One thing that I should mention here, by the way, with the swim start, it's not answering your question directly, but I just thought this is a really important tip, because in the swim, especially at the start, it can be very congested, and there's a lot of swimming on top of each other going on there at the start. So it's very important that you take a good starting place. And a good starting place, if you're a weaker swimmer, that means at the back of the field and at the side of the field, so that you're not getting locked in and stuck in the middle of a lot of people that will swim on top of you. Mm-hmm. So stay probably, for example, you can take the wide line towards the first buoy. So it might look like it's a slightly longer way to the buoy, but really the difference is very small. And you will be at the back of the field, but also at the side of the field. So you will only have one side basically to worry about in terms of other people potentially swimming over you. So that's something that can reduce a lot of anxiety and frustration on the swim.
That is such a good point. That's a really
good point.
And I also would recommend that for people who are very intimidated by the thought of doing three events and getting kicked and all that, that a woman's triathlon is also something that is a possibility for women, because generally women are going to be a little less assertive, a little less aggressive in that swimming portion. And that, you know, can cause a little bit of anxiety to calm down.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's an excellent point. So then once you get out of your swim, then as you're a beginner, then just take it easy. Don't stress. Don't try not to get your heart up too much. Don't sprint from the swim to the transition area. But actually what I recommend is that you should have been practicing this at least a couple of times in training, to swim out of the water and jog in your wetsuit, pull up your goggles and try to start to pull down your zipper on your wetsuit while you're jogging to the mm-hmm. transition area. Mm-hmm. But the first transition, you will set it up on race morning, so you will already have set it up. And this is where it really you should ask somebody in your local community and see what they do, and also check the rules of the specific event. But usually you would have your bike on a rack, and you would have your helmet on your bike and your sunglasses if you use them. For a beginner, you will have your bike shoes next to the bike, maybe in your transition box, if that's the kind of race that you will have a box right next to your bike where all your stuff is. And then once you get there, it's important to put your helmet on before you touch and unrack, well, before you unrack your bike at least.
Oh, yeah.
Put your helmet on first, otherwise you might get disqualified.
Oh.
And just take it easy. This is also something that I recommend practicing in training, because then it will be so much easier. So it's really important to practice this a couple of times. But don't stress. It's better to be effective than to be super fast. But because if you're trying to be super fast, then it's a very big chance that you will miss something. So you're running, you have pulled down that zipper on the wetsuit, pulled up your goggles, you can pull down the entire upper part of your wetsuit, and you will have your tri-suit underneath your wetsuit. And then once you get to your bike in the transition area, you pull down the wetsuit and remove the rest of it. Something that makes it a little bit easier is if you apply Body Glide both to your wrist and to your calves and your feet before putting on the wetsuit. It will reduce the friction. And you can also do this on the outside of the wetsuit, so on the lower parts of the legs and the arms. They will even more reduce the friction and make it easier to pull off. And even cutting your wetsuit's legs so they are a bit shorter. Don't go down quite all the way to your ankles, but actually they end somewhere on the calves. That also makes it a bit faster to pull off your wetsuit. So yeah, you do that. You grab your helmet, put it on, remove everything from the swim. So the wetsuit and the goggles and the swim cap, and put everything in your box. You cannot leave anything on the ground. So make sure, have an extra look around you that you haven't littered in your area, because that can result in a disqualification. If there's anything else that you need from your box, like any nutrition or hydration that you don't have already on your bike, but I would recommend having already a bottle of sports drink on your bike in the bottle cage all ready to go. So it will basically be just putting on the helmet, putting on the shoes, unracking your bike, and jogging with it out of transition past the dismount or mount line. So after the mount line, you can get on your bike. And again, don't stress. You can save 2 seconds by being super fast and stressing, but you can lose so many more seconds by stressing and messing up and falling off your bike when you try to jump on it too quickly. So ignore those flying mounts. That's for the more advanced stage of triathlon training. At your first race, just get on easily and smoothly, step over the bike, lean it over a bit so it's easy to step over the saddle, clip in one foot, start pedaling, clip in the other, and off you go. And don't go too fast, because that's another very common mistake. You're already full of adrenaline after the swim, and then you try to sprint out of transition. But like in running, pace yourself. So that's for the first transition, most of the points that I could think of.
Wow. It sounds a little overwhelming, but I think it's important to realize that during the event itself, there's just such a high going on. There's so much energy around you that you can just kind of follow along with that energy, and it usually will take you where you want to go.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. So true.
And then, of course, there's another transition at the end of the cycling. Can you talk about that briefly? That's a little more straightforward, actually.
It is. It's much, much more straightforward. And some athletes, even beginners, will learn to actually, they will put their shoes or their feet on their cycling shoes while they're still cycling. So It is quite easy to actually, if you have cardboard shoes, you just pull out your feet out of the shoes and put them on. And then you step off your bike at a low speed, but still at speed. It's actually much easier than the flying mount getting on the bike, but it's not something you have to do. You can just unclip as you're used to in your normal day-to-day training, step off the bike, and make sure that you don't play with the margins, because there is that mount line and dismount line, and you need to mount the bike after that line and dismount your bike before that. And again, if you're too late, you will risk disqualification. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't hurt you to get off that line 3 meters before it or 5 meters before it, rather than trying to make it 5 centimeters before it and then actually cutting it too short and getting over that line before you get off.
Yeah. Now, a question about swimming, because swimming is, as far as I know, it's always the first event. Why is that?
There is the same, well, in most events, yes, it is the first event. There are some special events coming up these days, but that's very unusual. So let's not go into that. But safety aspects is one of the things. So because when you're fresh, you're less likely to drown. And drowning is very, like, it doesn't happen. Just as dying during marathons is really unusual compared to, like, how many people run marathons. Drowning in triathlons is really like an event that very, very rarely happens. But still, race directors have that responsibility. So putting the swim first once everybody is fresh is less of a risk than doing it after everybody has really exerted themselves on the bike and the run.
That makes a lot of sense. Now, I want you to talk a little bit more about your triathlon show, because I have listened to it. I was impressed with it. And I also know that you have a lot of good information for our listeners who would want to move into triathlons. How could they benefit from listening to your triathlon show?
Yeah, so I really have topics there. Thank you for that, by the way, first. It means a lot for me to hear that.
Sure.
I really have topics for all different levels. So even though my brand is Scientific Triathlon and the website is scientifictriathlon.com, it's not all that. The podcast has a lot of episodes that are called beginner tips. I think I have like beginner tip 1 through 35. So those episodes are actually great places to start for the beginners that are thinking of transitioning to triathlon. And even at the beginning, they were quite well organized chronologically. I want to say that beginner tip 1 through 10 or 15 really walked you through the basics of getting started. So those are all about just the simple application of triathlon. We don't get into any science or theory. It's just what to do, how to do it, basically. So basic tip that any beginner could benefit from. But then the rest of it, I think that we're living in a world of information overload. So once you, especially for those that if you get hooked on triathlon, it's very likely that you want to do more, you want to go longer, you want to get faster. And there's a lot of information out there. And I have taken it as a mission to try to be a bit critical of information and try to really see what information exists out there and what is actually factually correct and what we really don't know and can't really take a stance on yet from what is known and what might be just individual. So rather than trying to say that something, it has to be like this, you have to periodize your training plan like this, or you have to do your intervals this way rather than this way, you have to spend this many percent of your training time swimming versus biking versus running, etc. So trying to distill those sorts of things for the listeners that want to basically get the most out of training time. That's many of my episodes. I really always try to take the perspective of how can the listener, who is usually an age grouper that has a limited amount of time, how can they make sure that they get the most out of the time that they put into their training? If they have 10 hours, how can they use those 10 hours per week to train more effectively than they are currently doing and really get the most out of their time investment and also monetary investment as well in triathlon?
I like that.
Yeah, so there is the trajectory from the beginner to when you get more advanced and through intermediate. So that's basically in a nutshell what the show is about.
And I highly recommend people listening to it and looking through the different topics and the different episodes and listening to some of them, because there's a lot of information on there. And you're also very clear to understand. Your English is excellent, even though that's your second language. Congratulations. You've got good control of English.
Thank you, Stephanie. And one more thing that I wanted to mention about the podcast that just came to me is that it's not all me talking. I do a lot of interviews as well. So So I try to get different perspectives that way, but I am quite selective about the guests. So I vet them and make sure that they actually know what they are talking about. That doesn't mean that we can't have different perspectives. We do have different perspectives, which also helps the listeners understand that it's not all black and white. So
totally.
For example, nutrition is a hot topic. So I have had guests that have different opinions on that topic. So to show different sides of the same coin.
Yeah, I love the nutrition part of my job here because it's such a diverse topic. And I'm having a woman come on and talk to us about magnesium, which of course is a huge issue for people, but also CBD oil. And I'm really excited about that because, of course, that's controversial as well. But gosh, nutrition is such an important part of performing well and feeling good and all of those kinds of things. But the scientific aspect of it can be very questionable. You know, it's not clear science.
Yeah, no, not always. It depends. There are some things that we know, but there are a lot of things that we are still very much in the gray area about what we actually can say and cannot say. And that's where I think mainstream media, many times they jump to conclusions and, well, that's their job because they need to sell clicks and they need to sell newspapers, that sort of thing. But I'm not in that business of selling clicks or like download numbers aren't really what I care the most about. I care about the listener engagement and the listeners really getting value from the podcast. So for me, I can go more in depth and not have that sensationalist headline. And that means that we can get a more neutral perspective on certain topics where there should be neutrality, where we don't really know what is the case and what is not the case.
Right. And I really appreciate that I have the freedom to be able to do that as the host of this show. It's something that I am very happy, you know, that I have the flexibility. It's nice to be able to introduce some controversial subjects and see what other people think.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a great learning tool for us as hosts and as human beings, as coaches, because if you stop learning, then I think that's really starting to go backwards. So I think that having the opportunity to talk to different people and get different perspectives, that's only something that will help anybody grow.
It's wonderful. Now, you are also, in addition to doing a podcast and coaching people, you are also actively training yourself at a high amateur level and have qualified as a world championship contender. So how much time per week are you able to put into your own training?
So right now, I train around about 15 to 17 hours per week, usually.
Okay. And that's a pretty good amount of time, but probably feasible for a lot of us if we're serious about being competitive.
Yeah, I think it is for many. I have some athletes that train roughly the same and some one athlete at least, maybe no, two actually, that train more than myself. Because my job, even though I'm fortunate that I have very much flexibility in my job, but the hours I put in are at least as big as I put in as an engineer, because now I'm trying to make it as a self-employed coach rather than an employed engineer at a Finnish startup company. So it's a different challenge. So I do have a lot of work. And that's what I found this summer, that the 20 to 23, 24 hours per week that I was putting in, that was just too much, not physically for me, but with the time management, mm-hmm. It just made the overall life stress too big. So I couldn't adapt to the training. So reducing those hours to something that was feasible for me with my current workload, that really made a massive difference.
That's great to know, because I'm sure a lot of people struggle with it. They feel they need to put in these large amounts of time and maybe they don't.
Yes, exactly. You know, the goal with training really is that, you should maximize the training load just only to the extent that you can have positive adaptations from it. Because training load in itself is worth nothing if you don't get the adaptations from it.
Totally. Now, I've got a quote here that you sent to me in your bio, and it says, after his triathlon career is over, he wants to focus on more experience and adventure-driven endurance sports like mountain running, trail running, swim, run, and mountainous road cycling. Talk a little bit about that. We're getting close to the end of our time here, but give us a little bit of insight into where you might be in the future.
Yeah, so I'm starting to look forward to that now that you mentioned it. So I dabbled a little bit into those, all of those disciplines, really. I've done some skyrunning events, or one skyrunning event twice, which was the Tromsø Sky Race in northern Norway. And that is actually, when you asked about my favorite running distance or running event. Probably I should have put sky running, because that was just an out of this world experience to be running in the Norwegian mountains and fells and crossing small rivers and creeks and running in the forest and then running up mountains, scrambling, climbing. It was just magical. And that's the sort of running that I want to do more of in the future. I've done another Finnish trail ultra event as well. It wasn't quite as extreme as the Tromsø Sky Race, but yeah, no, that's something that I absolutely want to get into more. I really love that. That was just amazing.
So cool.
The swim run is something that I want to mention as well, because it's something that not everybody knows about, but that's a really cool new sport that's originally from Sweden.
Okay.
And the idea there is that you basically island hop. So you run, swim, run, swim, run, swim.
Oh my gosh.
You wear the same gear all the time. So the original swim run race is, it's in total, I think, 60 kilometers of running and 10 kilometers of swimming.
Wow.
But it's split up over, I want to say something like 20 stages of running, of which the longest stage is a half marathon, but then there are plenty of shorter ones like 1 kilometer, half a kilometer, 3 kilometers, that sort of thing. And same thing with the swims. You have some long swims that are maybe 2 kilometers or 2.5 kilometers, but plenty of shorter ones as well, 500 meters and likes.
Wow.
So you have like a suit that is cut at the thighs basically. And usually it can be a long sleeve or a short sleeve. And you carry equipment. There are some aid stations as well, but it's a really cool extreme sport. And I've done a few of those races, not that original one, but I did one on the island in the Baltic Sea where I come from. That is a Swedish speaking community, but belonging to Finland. It was a marathon in total, and the 10 kilometers of swimming split up over 17 run stages and 16 swim stages. Very remote, very rugged, very beautiful. So a sport that I really love.
Yeah, well, so you're wearing some kind of a wetsuit while you're swimming, and then what do? You like unzip it and you know, take part of it off when you're running?
The difference to a triathlon wetsuit is that it's it has short legs, so it's easier to run in. It's a bit thinner around the groin area, so it's more runnable. And you have the zipper on the front, so yes, because you would get very warm running in it if you can't unzip it, especially those long run stages. So you can at least unzip it,
totally,
even though you don't pull it down, but you get some breeze on your chest rather than having to be stuck in your wetsuit. So yeah, that's how it works. And then you swim in the shoes and everything. You have shoes that can drain the water very efficiently. So that's the way it works.
Wow, so cool. Well, I think it's terrific that there are all of these new kinds of adventure events that are evolving out of the, pretty much a lot of times it was just traditional swimming or traditional running or traditional cycling. And now look at all of the different aspects of that are, and who knows what's next, you know, there's going to be more.
I'm sure there will be. Yes, yes. It's exciting.
It is. It's exciting. Well, we're going to change gears here and move into the final kick. So I do want to give you a chance, any kind of summary, any kind of stuff that you want to finalize before we move into our next gear.
I think, well, I have two things that I want to add that I didn't mention already, I think. Mm-hmm. And the first one is just don't be embarrassed. Don't be afraid of looking stupid if you want to get into triathlon when you are in the pool, when you are on the bike. The more you can forget about being embarrassed and not get down about being the slowest when you start out, the quicker you will improve and you won't be the slowest anymore. So take that growth mindset and a positive attitude and put yourself in challenging and somewhat uncomfortable situation, and you will really quickly, you will start improving in all different aspects of triathlon. Yeah. And the second one is that we already mentioned it a little bit, but you don't need to spend a lot of money on gear. Really spend as little as you can at first while you learn about the sport and see if you enjoy it and want to stay in it for the long haul. So yeah, get a secondhand bike or even just borrow a bike as you start out. And one thing that I would say is really beneficial is joining that triathlon club. And if possible, get a coach and get a bike fit. Then the actual equipment side of things, you can get by with really minimal investments, and you should try to get by on minimal investments until you decide if that's something that you want to do on the long haul.
I totally agree with you. Now, talking about triathlons, I wanted to bring up to our listeners that if you haven't listened to the Pease Brothers interview on their experience with Ironman World Championship 2018, be sure to take a listen right here on the Run to the Top podcast. They set a world record as a team at Ironman 2018, and their story leading up to the race is amazing. And the video of them finishing will certainly bring tears to your eyes. It was, the whole experience for me was very, very positive, and I would like to share that with as many of you as have a chance to take it in. So we are going to move on to the final kick, and are you ready for this, Michael?
Yes, I am.
It's pretty fun, actually. And since you're in Lisbon, Portugal, what is your favorite local training run? And when we come to visit, how are we going to find it, and where? What will we be doing?
There's a really nice forest park here in right in the city center, which is sort of like New York has its Central Park. Mm-hmm. The park is called Monsanto, and it's just a big and hilly forest area right within Lisbon. So I really like that. It has, you can run roads there, so there are even cars driving around there. But it's mostly for cyclists and runners. So mm-hmm. running on the roads or running on the gravel roads, and so you can get a lot of elevation in there as well. It's very hilly, but it's a really nice area.
Nice. And how far? What would be like the maximum distance that you could cover if you wanted to?
If you do a lap around the park, what could that be? On following the roads, it would be maybe something like 10 kilometers. I'm not sure really, mm-hmm. but I usually get in maybe 18 kilometers if I run the 3.5 or 4 kilometers from where I live to the park and then back, and then I do a lap on the road. So, mm-hmm. so maybe I get in around 9 kilometers in the actual park and 9 kilometers outside of the park.
All right. Sounds like a good place to visit. Favorite or recommended running book?
I have so many, so I'm going to cheat. And because I have this question as well on my podcast, and a lot of people cheat, so I'm going to take the opportunity to do so.
All right.
For the runners, this is something that I think is not recommended nearly often enough. It's Advanced Marathoning by Pete Fitzinger and Scott Douglas. Mm. That's one of my first love affairs with the endurance sports books. For triathlon, Triathlon Science, which is co-edited by Joe Friel and Jim Vance. And in general about nutrition, we have Matt Fitzgerald's The Endurance Diet. And my next podcast episode will actually be an interview with, that will be out at the very end of October, depending on when this episode is out. So it will be about The Endurance Diet, an interview with Matt Fitzgerald. So
cool.
You can get a sneak peek of the book there.
Yeah.
And then finally, Endure by Alex Hutchinson. I think mm-hmm. you've had Alex on to talk about that book, actually, on your podcast.
Well, his Endure is relatively new, right? And I don't think we've had him on. I haven't had him on since I've been here, which is about a year.
Okay, maybe it was with his previous book, if he had one.
So.
Well, and Endure is, anyway, it's about the mental aspect and how important the brain is and the limits that the brain rather than the muscles place on how we perform and how we can sort of bend those limits to our advantage and try to trick the brain and negotiate cleverly with ourselves. So that's a really good one as well.
Yeah, I was looking at that on Amazon the other day, and I thought I need to get in touch with him and, you know, find out.
He's also a past interview guest on that triathlon show, so you can listen to that interview to hear more about the book as well.
Okay, so we are now almost at the very end, so please do give us contact information and how our audience can stay in touch with you, both as a podcaster, as a coach, and to follow your individual progress.
So as a podcaster and coach, scientifictriathlon.com is my website, and that is, you can find the podcast there as well in the menu. You can find the podcast separately on any podcast app that you use, Apple Podcasts, any Android podcast app, Spotify, and the podcast itself is called That Triathlon Show. So if you search for that, you'll find it. And me individually, I do have an Instagram. It's MKERIKSS. So it's like Michael Carl Eriksson. That's my middle name as well. So MK Eriks with two S's. So you can follow me there. But I am not too active there. So I would say that the website and the podcast are really the best places. And on the podcast, I will have some personal updates as well from time to time.
Sounds good. So we are pretty much at the end of things. And thank you so much for talking with us, Michael. And I've got to add my little bit of language here because I have a Swedish background. Tack så mycket.
Det var jätteroligt att vara här. Thank you, Stephanie.
So this wraps up this interview at Run to the Top. Please follow us at Runners Connect Winner Circle on Facebook by going to runnersconnect.net/FB. be. And please subscribe to Run to the Top podcast at runnersconnect.net or on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, etc. You'll be notified every week when each new episode is published. Coach, podcaster, triathlete Michael Erickson, good luck in your personal pursuits as a triathlete and keep up the good work in helping others. Thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you, Stephanie. I really enjoyed it. And thank you for all you do for the running and endurance sports community.
It's such a gift to me to be able to do this. Thank you. And as always, thank you to our audience for listening. We'll be back next week with another great listening episode to accompany you as you head out on your running workout. This is Stephanie K. Atwood, your host with Run to the Top, and have a good one.
Thanks for listening to the Run to the Top podcast from runnersconnect.net.